are listening to a University of Minnesota Bookstore author event podcast, recorded live from our location in Kauffman Memorial Union on the U of M's Twin Cities campus. For more information on upcoming author events, please visit our website at bookstore.umn.edu.
I would like to welcome Darren Kaltved and Heather Nagel. I'm reading it so that I get your names right. Here today, and they're going to talk about their book, Love at First Interview. Then they'll take questions, and we have books over here if you want to purchase any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here today. We're excited. You know, if I was Trump, I'd say this crowd was the largest they've ever had, but I'm not, so.
Second largest.
Right, second largest. But what Heather and I are going to do is we're going to do some thank yous to people that we feel are well deserving of this. We're going to talk about a little bit about how we came to this idea with this book. And then we'll do a little reading and open it up for a conversation. How does that sound? Is that good? Okay.
We can even give you some free career advice personally. So
we could.
Let us know if you need a little tip or two.
We did not write this blindfolded, but
right.
Pretty close. So really what this book is this is a book that we really wanted dedicated to the many students, clients that we've worked with, who have inspired, challenged us, and who've driven us to love what we do. Because one of the things we talk a lot about is this idea of do what you love and you'll love what you do. And we really believe that. So we also want to do a special thank you to our family for our daily encouragement and the loving foundation in our lives. To get to this point as a self-published author is not easy. We've had a lot of ups and downs through this process. It's been literally an 8-year process to get to this point. When you have a full-time job in itself, it's really challenging. One of the things that we learned through this is it's all about relationships. And my good friend and colleague and mentor, Vic, this is his thing. And it is all about relationships. And so through our connections, we were able to identify editors. We were able to identify people to help us endorse this book. And it was awesome.
Yeah,
the writing part was probably the easiest, except for melding our two styles. But it can be done, people. It can be done. So,
I would say also too, it was fun to do it with Darren because it helps keep you in check. It gives you someone to bounce ideas off of. It really is nice to have a different perspective, and just to look at the scope of it. When you start, if you decide to start writing a book ever, you find out quickly it can become this enormous thing because so many things are interrelated. And so a lot of what we talked about doing was showing it to people who would benefit from it more than people who were in the career profession, because they would give us suggestions, like all maximizers, right? Anyone else have maximizer in your strength? How to make it better, how to include more things and things. So it is actually, we intentionally made it kind of small, interactive, and with examples and stories. So it's hopefully, the goal is that it is not a masterpiece of writing. It is more about an engaging way to get people who are panicking about job searching or figuring out what they want to do, engage with an activity and a book and some examples so they can build their confidence and head into their job search and their interview and feel really good about it. So that's kind of the approach we took, and it was nice to have Darren say, you know, we can dial that back or we can dial this up. So it turned into 8 steps, which is a good number anyway. So there might be more, there could be less, but that's what we talked about.
Awesome. So basically, where did this idea come from? Well, I'll tell you literally what was going on. I was at a national conference, and I went into a session and I sat next to someone. I had no idea who this person was, but being the extrovert I am, and being a woo, if you know strengths, I introduced myself. She happened to be a publisher. And I said, you know what? Can I just run something by you? I have this idea for this book, and just curious what your thoughts are. So I told her about the book, and she said I would publish it right now. And that was the moment this all started, was then I came back and was like, okay, if I write a book about love at first interview, I don't want it to be gender biased. I need a female co-author. And so I immediately thought of Heather, and it couldn't have been better. Yeah. I mean, our styles meld very well. I think the way we approach career development is pretty much right on par with each other. The other thing that we wanted to do is we're both very evidence-based career counselors. We're very practical. We're very realistic. We're not generalists. What I really like about this book is that it is very practical, the exercises, but it's literally, here's exactly what you need to do, okay? It's very, very, very little theory, if at all. We don't consider ourselves theorists, but it's really about the practicality. The other thing we wanted to do was really look at using analogies, using metaphors to really relate this concept of interviewing and job searching to what a lot of us are familiar with, and that's dating. And so...
or not familiar with.
But. Or not familiar with, right? There's that. Well said. But hopefully this is a book that you find useful throughout your career. It's, like I said, it's really ideal for anyone from high school age up, even for those in encore careers, which a lot of people kind of popularize as 50 plus. But it's one of those things where I think you can really relate to. There's some good stories in here, and it's very, very practical.
The biggest endorsement I got is I had both of my daughters who are now college age. I know it's hard for belief, but I look so young. But my college age daughters were the final proofreaders for us, as many others. And both of them came back to me at different points and said, you know, this was really helpful. And they acted really shocked, like I knew what I was talking about. So I thought, when your daughters actually say, wow, this thing worked. And what my youngest daughter gave it to her roommate a couple weeks ago, because her roommate was panicking. She got an interview for an internship. And she's like, what do I do? And Ella goes, here you go, chapter. So it was kind of fun to see it actually help someone. And that's kind of what we're in this for, is just to help people and to have some fun while we're doing it.
Should we do some reading?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so there's a lot in here I could have read, but I'm just going to pick one part about exploring fit. In both dating and interviewing, getting to know one another typically starts with the statement, tell me a little about yourself. How someone chooses to answer that question can be pivotal. Assess what information they share about themselves. Is it consistent with their online profile? Does it complement what you're looking for? An honest answer with thoughtful and relevant information will go a long way in both dating and interviewing for a job. If your date highlights their values and lifestyle requirements, using creative ways to truly show their authentic self, you'll appreciate the genuine answer and can contemplate a fit. When it comes to the interview, it is expected that you research the company extensively. This doesn't mean memorizing their About Us page, but instead, research the basics, and then research news articles from credible sources or network with professionals who have a more direct connection to the company. This will provide you with a deeper understanding of the company. For most interviews, you will be asked a question along the lines of, why us? We recommend identifying at least three attributes about the company that specifically attract you to them. The more the attributes have depth, the better, more authentic your response.
All right, well, there are two sections that I like. My first story that's on the first chapter actually is true. So a friend of mine asked me, my then 3-year-old daughter Ella, what she wanted to be when she grew up. Ella thought carefully for a few minutes and then replied, God. As a career coach, Heather loved the answer but thought, aim high, but be ready to have an alternative option. You really enjoy it in case God isn't interviewing for a replacement. So... that example tells me I love encouraging people, and I have never told anyone they can't achieve what they want to achieve. But there may be a few steps along the way. She was really bummed when they picked a different pope, and she was in fourth grade, too. But we're not Catholic, so her chances were pretty slim anyway. The activity that we did along with this chapter, I really like, because Darren and I have both done this in classes with people. We have students in the class during the first part say, think about your first, so everybody work along with me here. Think about your first crush, like your first crush or even your first date. First time you thought, oh my goodness. And think about what attracted you to that person. And what did you know about them? What kind of sparked that interest? What got you excited about that? How long did that first impression last? What changed once you got to know them? Now imagine you have to be together every day for the rest of your life. What's your reaction? So we have a lot of students that come to us and they think they have to pick a career for the rest of their life. And I say, imagine if you'd done that with your first date or your first crush. No. So that was just an example of how we kind of took inspiration and activity so you can get involved and you can think about it and make it on a really personal level and then go, okay, I have permission to explore. I have permission to talk to different people and discuss different things. Another section of the book, I got some comments and feedback from people who have read it. They like the part about when you don't get the offer because nobody explained that to me when I didn't get the offer, and it's huge rejection, and it's really an opportunity to beat yourself up that you don't need. A lot of times when you stop and think about it, you just dodged a huge bullet potentially, right? Like they knew you weren't a good fit. There was something better that was right up your alley. So we talk a little bit about first you have to give yourself time to grieve, but then you got to think about what's the next step now. How do I reflect and change my approach and change what I'm looking for so I'm not just bummed out with this whole job search thing? So anything else you want to chat about? Or?
Wow, that was impressive. I know I picked her. No, I think we turn it over to the audience for questions, whether it's about the book, like Heather said, if you need interviewing advice. I just thought of something. So the other thing in here, when I talk about practicality, a lot of times when we talk about resumes, interviewing, job searching, there tends to be this sort of generalist, okay, do X, Y, Z. But I want you to know that in here, especially in the interviewing part, we have stuff in here about how to answer some unique interview questions, okay? And I'll never forget the question I got for a graduate assistantship when they said, if you could be any kind of vegetable, what kind of vegetable would you be and why? Right? At that moment, I realized after, you know, swallowing my tongue like, uh-oh, was interviewing is so broad and so deep, and they can go a variety of different directions. I always tell students that one of the most difficult part about interviewing is interviewing with people that don't know how to conduct an interview. And that's absolutely going to happen to you. And so one of the things that we hope that this book does is really gets you prepped, gets you ready to be able to go in and meet them where they're at and be successful. So at this point, let's turn it over to questions that you may have about the book, about interviewing, about job searching. So have at it. Yes?
What was your vegetable?
Oh, good one. I immediately went to my first thought of a vegetable, which was a carrot. And then the next idea was you need to think about characteristics of a carrot that describe you. Well, at that point, I nearly had to pull stuff out of you know what. And so I decided to, you know, think of a couple things. They grow in the ground. So they're rooted in a lot of experience, a lot of values, a lot of morals. Then I talked about when I grew up, I was always told, eat your vegetables, specifically carrots, because they're good for your eyes. Vision. So I talked about vision. And then the last part is that carrots can be universal, they can be adaptable, they can be a main course, they can complement another dish. And so I started talking about that. Yes, I literally pulled this out of nowhere.
We recommend prepping for that.
Right. And so I used that experience to then talk about, okay, how do you get those questions, right? So, carrot was what I used.
Great question.
What else? Yes?
Sorry, I might have missed this. I feel like a lot of interviewing is decided in the first 10 seconds.
Yep.
Based on their emotional, subconscious read of you, which biases them, and they can't really stop it.
Right.
So how do you, like, and then you're nervous going in, because it's probably one of the first few people you're talking to, mm-hmm. not warmed up.
Yep.
How do you deliver the emotional cues they're looking for?
Sure. You want to go first?
Yeah, sure. We talk about that quite a bit because it is that first impression and dressing appropriately, right? You look like you're ready to go to an interview. So a lot of what we talk about is researching the culture too. So you have to know the organization. My best advice to students when they're heading into an interview is go do an informational interview with someone who knows someone so that you can go and physically go to that location and experience the culture and the vibe. You might not want to interview after you do that, or you might be really excited. An example was I went on a graphic design industry tour, and anybody toured a graphic design firm lately? Great. Nobody wears dresses or suits, right? I was the only one in a dress on the tour. I was, you know, as a staff person from the U of M, but everyone was in jeans and black t-shirts. Like, that was it. That's the only thing. And so a student who had not researched showed up for an interview in a tie, and the creative director was on the elevator with him. He didn't know that. And he said he kind of looked like an axe murderer anyway because he's in a flannel shirt and has messed up hair. And the creative director leans over to the guy and goes, "You have an interview today?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Lose the tie." So researching where you're going, trying to talk to someone to make you feel more comfortable, knowing what you bring to the table, knowing if you will fit in with that culture, and then just be as my advice to students too, if you're heading into an interview, you're going in to make a friend. You know, it's not about the right answer. It's about a relationship. And so if you can just go in and be yourself as much as possible, but know what about you fits, you're going to do really well. And be excited and enthusiastic.
Awesome. The other piece to that, I would say, is that we know they're going to make a first impression within the first 5-7 seconds, okay? And so if we're talking specifically about an in-person interview, one of the things that you want to do in this day and age is there's a lot that you can find out about the people conducting the interview well in advance of going into the interview. Social media is huge with this, okay? And one of the things that we tend to talk a lot about with students with doing your research is to identify who's interviewing you, okay? Then having an idea of, you know, sort of like, do I go on a blind date or do I go on a date based on a referral of someone I trust who told me a little bit about the person? Yeah. Okay? You're going to feel much more comfortable with that. Once you get in, it's kind of like when they look at your resume for 6 to 8 seconds, we need to get their attention. We need to know that you're present, you're focused, and you're excited and passionate to be there. I see a lot of, you know, we conduct a lot of search committees, a lot of interviews, and one of the things that I look at are candidates that come in and just automatically sit down. They don't go around, they don't introduce themselves, they don't shake hands, they don't make direct eye contact, okay? It's one thing to look the part, but it's other to act the part. And so you want to be present, you want to know you're taking this seriously, and always remember, and it's in here heavily, it's a two-way street, people. You're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. So pay attention to their behavior. Pay attention to their demeanor, okay? And what does that tell you? They're selling their organization to you. And if you're not catching the vibe, okay?
Find a different
next opportunity.
Yeah. Great, great question.
What else?
We got some career counselors in the room, too.
We do. I know. They're making me sweat a little bit.
I know.
So, yes. Yes?
I changed my major from economics to human resource development. Do you think in the interview I should mention the previous working experience related to economics or just the human resource development? Because my purpose is just I want to find a job related to HRD, like right now.
Right. Right. I would say that it's all in context to who the audience is, okay? If part of your previous program and previous experience is relevant or a contributing factor to your journey to where you're going after, absolutely. But if it's a complete 180 and it's completely different and it has no direct context or relevance to what you're talking about or who you're talking with, then they're, you know, it's, they don't need to know, okay? This isn't a point of situation where they need to know everything about you, okay? How did you get from point A to point B? We talk a lot about this in the interview question. Tell me about yourself, right? If you, for those of you in this room that don't know, it's the most commonly asked question, and it's the most difficult question. And, you know, for the students in this room, grad, undergrad, whatever level you're at, this is the most commonly asked question to us. How do I answer this question? Well, here's the thing. What they're really asking you is, tell me about your journey to this type of work. It's not about when you learn how to ride a tricycle and tied your shoes and what elementary school you went to. No. This is really about, how did you get to this interest? And if that interest, to get to that interest, ended up taking you through the journey of economics, then you absolutely include it. If it wasn't an influence or it wasn't a factor, then they don't need to know.
Yeah, so really you're trying to figure out what are the top things that make you uniquely qualified for any position and any company or organization, because they're all different too. And so if you can do some research on the company and the organization, what's important to them, and then tie in, if you did something in an economics role that is a transferable skill that you would use in HRD, maybe it's analytical or something that where you have more attention to detail than maybe other applicants have, then you could absolutely highlight, here's where I learned it, now I'm ready to move into this other arena and take all that information. So I have experience doing that. It's just at a different venue. So, yeah.
Does that help? Good.
Are you liking your major better?
Yes.
Good. I switch too.
Everybody switches.
It's normal. Yes.
Well, it seems like the conclusion of an interview is also important. And often when I've been interviewed, the concluding question to me is, do you have any questions?
Yes.
What's the best way to handle
that? Ooh, good question. Yeah, so first, most important thing, always have questions. Always, always, always.
The current counselors are nodding.
Yeah. Now, I'll share kind of my advice regarding this. I always suggest, one, you want to come in more than what you're going to ask. That way, you know, this day and age, a lot of organizations, companies will start talking about the position and expectations, and you're like, oh, no, they're starting to answer my questions. You got to have some. When you ask these questions, one of the things is give it value, give it time. Really put together some questions that have depth, that have reflection, that are thought-provoking. Don't just ask surface-level type questions, okay? I'll share an example with you. So my favorite question would be, and then I'll share my colleague's favorite question, because it's very similar. I love it. Can you identify one or two strategic initiatives that you hope to accomplish within the next year or two, and how you see me in this position and contributing the most? Now, one of the things you want to do with this is that this isn't just about, you know, what are your expectations? It's a good question. What are your expectations of me? But you're specifically identifying where that company wants to grow and how they see you being a contributor. It has depth. And if you can challenge the interviewer with questions like this, you're going to be much more successful through the process, okay? What does success look like is my colleague's favorite question. This is a very good question because what is success look like? And it's allowing those that are interviewing you to share their perspective on what success looks like for you specifically in this role. So you want to have some questions. You want to tailor the questions around the position, around the organization, culture, challenges, professional development. All that would be quantifiable. So,
yeah, and stay away from questions that get them thinking what is wrong with you or what are you lacking. Because I have had students ask that in mock interviews. They're like, is there anything for my application that you see needs work? I'm like, no. We don't want to talk about that during the interview. You talk to me about that beforehand.
We also avoid what?
Yeah, avoid money. Avoid anything that makes you look lazy. Hey. So you don't want to talk about vacation time. You don't want to talk about, you know, flexibility and things like that in the initial interview. So don't talk about anything that's going to make you look like you're only in it for the money or that anything that you could be lazy. So genuine questions are the best ones. So yep. If you've done some research and you genuinely have some questions about a project that they're doing, something beyond their homepage, then I think those are the best questions. I don't know if I'm as bold as Darren. I don't know if I would ask, where do you see me fitting with your success strategy? So you have to tailor it to your personality.
Yep.
And integrate it into something that you feel comfortable with. So.
Yeah. Any other last questions? Yes.
What about the dreaded weaknesses or failures?
Ooh. Oh, I love this.
Yes.
You want to start?
So with weakness, you identify a real one, right? Because no one wants to hear that you're a perfectionist. So you start with something that you really think is a weakness, but then you tell me what you're doing to get over it and how you've improved already. So you touch on it briefly, and it has to be real. But it also can't be a deal breaker. I had one student once tell me in a mock interview, you know, what's your weakness? They said, oh, I'm always late. I'm really bad with time. I'm like, all right, you got to just get better at that before you interview. So you have to pick something that is a weakness, but sure, not a deal breaker. So
I love this question. Here's the thing. The advice that's out there right now on the internet is wrong. It is. Because here's what they tell you. Give something that's also a strength. Here's why they ask the question, people. Here's literally why they ask the weakness question. Can you help them identify an area that they can help you grow and develop in? That is why they ask the question. It is not about what are you bad at, okay? And so the approach is, what I always suggest, pick something field specific. Pick something that you're in the process of strengthening. It's not something you're bad at. It may be something you're not as exposed to. What is that piece? And then you're going to talk about, okay, what have I done recently or currently to make that stronger? And then at the end, here's the catch. You bring it back to them and you say, and one of the many reasons, having researched this and talked to people with the organization, was knowing the type of culture and environment you provide that allow me to continue to grow and develop in this area.
There you go.
Bam. Okay? Bam. Literally. It's like Batman. Just be a bam. But that's kind of how you want to think about this weakness question, okay? And so we get a lot, too, when they say, can you give me an example of a time you failed? And students are like, ugh. Right? What are they really asking? They're asking you, tell me about a time things did not go as expected. So try not to overthink it, okay? There's always questions like this, and it's always to kind of, like I said, to tell me about yourself, to the weakness question, to this question. It's reframing it in your mind in a positive nature, and what are they really getting at here? Because every question they ask always has a purpose. There's always a reason they're asking it, even the vegetable question. Okay. Ben.
Obviously, it takes multiple years to write the book. You've been with career practitioners 10 plus years before writing it. Was there anything on interviewing, an opinion you had before that changed over the course of writing the book? Any maybe aha moments along the way that maybe you hold differently as a practitioner now versus pre-author?
Yeah, I would say, to take that even further, the aha moments for me is that there's going to have to be a second edition because resources change,
right.
Professionalism changes, technology changes. So I think the aha moment for me is let go of some of that perfectionist tendency and think about what's most important and kind of get it out there and then be ready to revise and update. As far as interviewing specifically, I think the aha moment was less when I was writing it and more when I was working with students. And I talked to some of those students. Like, I had a student interviewing with, I think it was Hollister or Abercrombie or someone, and she showed up in ripped jeans and flip-flops for the on-campus interviews. She got the job because that's what they sell there. So she researched it and dressed according to what they sell. So she wore all their clothing. She was the only one that day that got an offer, like, on the spot. So it was kind of an aha. You read all the official rules and the official things like that, and then you're like, wait, that goes out the window when you're talking about certain industries and certain positions. So I think it's just so evolving and changing with, you know, jobs that didn't exist 4 years ago and things like that. So
yeah, I concur with that. And I would say with the advancement of technology, Even the sense of what dating looks like now is so different to what I'm used to. But when you look at interviews, and there are experts out there saying that resumes are going to become obsolete, what's that going to do to this whole nature of recruiting and hiring? You know, is social media going to be the new resume? How does that shift this? So like Heather said, when we talk about this next edition, one of the things that we talked about, but we didn't go in depth with, was Skype interviews, video interviews, and how those are taking off. The other thing that we're seeing, a lot of our companies are having candidates do these self-assessments before they actually go through the process. And so, you know, those are some of the things we've learned is, you know, as you write it and it takes time, it's trying to keep it present and current and trendy, but as you're writing, it's slowly becoming out of date. And you know, we hope that the practicality of this is still useful. We believe it is, based on the nature of where things are right now.
Hey, I want to do a shout out to Lee Vu, who walked in. She's the one.
Wave your hand, Lee. Lee is our graphic designer. This is all her. So thank you, Lee. yeah, Lee is absolutely phenomenal. And how many of you have heard of Anne Bancroft?
Explorer.
Okay. Lee just landed a job with her. Where, do you want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, so she started.
Do you want to come up here?
No, sorry. Access Water Initiative, which is this 12-year strategy or plan where she does an expedition at every continent that focuses on water, and also clean water with the future queens. And so she brought me on board to help with, like, social and, I guess, brand strategy and what the next 12 years will look like. Ultimately, obviously, I'm leaving Antarctica, and I think that's when she'll retire. That's the hope.
Isn't that cool?
So Lee's going to be going on the expeditions.
Yes. In a canoe down the Mississippi.
With Anne Bancroft.
Yeah.
We'd like to think it's because she read the book.
Right.
Just kidding. We're just happy she designed it all for us and has been helping us with some strategies. So thanks to Lee.
All right. Well, how about this? We'll take one more question. Yes.
I wanted to ask, what are your thoughts on being productive?
That sounds horrible.
I know for me, sometimes I might look at posts, I might see 80 positions, I maybe see two that I can really target, and then maybe one of those, kind of trying to figure out how I can put merits as far as my skill set and give yourself a shot to get an interview. I'm just wondering, maybe from a production standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, what are your thoughts on that in terms of how you measure that?
Awesome question. So the question, just to reiterate, was basically about job search productivity, both in terms of how do you maintain mental and emotional stability? You know, is there a magic number out there that, you know, you need to apply to X number of jobs? Believe it or not, this is something that we do address in the book. We also talk tremendously about daily with students. The thing when it comes to the job search is it is ebb and flow. Okay, we realize, and you should realize, that there are multiple things on your plate while you're conducting a job search. You could be a student. You could be working on a project. You could be in your career, and you're looking for a new opportunity. There are things on your plate. With that being said, there are going to be weeks where you're going to have downtime. And then there's going to be weeks where it's just insane, and you're busy. My advice would be you want to monitor that and you want to implement the job search accordingly. And so there's no magic number. It's basically saying I'd rather you look at quality than quantity. I'd rather you really look at a job posting and look at an opportunity and say, is this me? Now, here's the other thing, a shocking thing that a lot of you might not realize. Whether you're male or female, this doesn't matter. The same approach. When you look at a position description, that is their wish list. They don't want it all. Because if they got it all, the room for growth for that candidate would be so small that there's no room for development. You would hit the ceiling pretty quick. So one of the things I suggest for a lot of students is if you have at least 60% of what they're looking for, you should consider applying. Now, as you look at these positions, job titles are going to vary so much, there's no method to the madness. So don't even worry about those. Here's the other thing that we get a lot about is when I look at a position description, it'll say 1 to 3 years experience, 3 to 5 years experience. Here's the thing with that, folks. They're guessing. Okay? There's zero analytics that indicate this is exactly the range of experience that we need. My colleague and I do a lot of presentations about generational differences. And a lot of these positions were written from people from a baby boom generation that all they've done is they've worked years. And so they're thinking, to get someone to do this position, they need X number of years of experience. When in reality, there are organizations out there that can look at your degree and say, we're automatically going to give you 2 years with that. Okay? So when it comes to the job search, you want to monitor it. Now, here's the other catch. What percentage of jobs are found through job postings? 10 to 12%. What does that mean, right? Well, that means the majority, roughly around 60% of them, are found through relationships, are found through connections. So it may not be 1 week or 2 weeks. It may not be as much about you looking at actual job postings when, in fact, maybe you have 3 or 4 informational interviews mm-hmm. or you reached out to 3 or 4 people. I would consider that a job search success.
Absolutely. Think about that with dating. If you only did online dating applications or sites, right, and you didn't talk to any of your friends and you didn't let anyone know you were interested and you didn't kind of research other venues and use your network, it's not going to be nearly as effective. So if you can figure out what you want and who you are and then talk to people who are doing something like that, it's way more effective. You can use postings, like Darren said, like 10% of your effort should go towards postings and the rest of it should be more about reflecting on who you are, what are your values, where do you want to live, what type of environment do you like, and then trying to meet people that are involved with that. And then the success rates just go through the roof really quickly if you can kind of identify those avenues and then apply that versus just on paper. You know, think if you were looking for a roommate or something and all you got was online applications. But if someone called you up and said, hey, I saw your posting, let's have coffee and see if we're compatible, you'd be much more likely to give them a chance, right? Because they're more proactive. Or they come referred from a friend, then you're more likely to look at them more seriously. So that's what we talk about a lot, just because it is the way it works. And a lot of students say, oh, I don't want to do networking. That sounds so slimy. I'm just using people. No, you're using your connections to help you pre-screen people, just right. like you would in dating.
Yep.
Right? So
yep.
Great question.
Well,
you guys
good.
Want some books?
So after this, first off, before we do that, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, this is so nice.
This is fantastic. We're both new to this whole thing, so
we
are beyond humble and appreciative for you all to be here. We're going to head over to where the books are. We would love for you to purchase. We'll also do some signings, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Well, and thanks to those many people who came just to say hi. So thank you to all you supportive bosses and fans.
Colleagues,
and
yes.
And friends and all sorts of people. So thank you.
Thank you.